Thanks, Tommy. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. If you're around Sheriff Street in Dublin, you might have spotted Hungry Henry. Hungry Henry is a hern. Like a bit of alliteration on a Tuesday afternoon. He seems to get around. He's mostly been spotted around Sheriff Street. Many people have papped him. He stands on cars, on fences. He roams the streets. And he's been around for months. He's been also seen in Ring's End. And he seems to be very comfortable with human company. And he's just waiting to be fed. Some call him Henry. Others call him George. Why would you call a hungry heron George? He seems to be an integral part of the neighbourhood down there. And there's some great pictures there. He looks very comfortable sitting on the bonnet of that car. Does Hungry Henry. Herons make a weird noise. No, there's some types of heron. It's sort of a warbling type noise. We heard it there during lockdown when there was very little other noises around. I wonder what sound Hungry Henry makes. AI, look, it's not going away. It's not going away. And now Tom Hanks has weighed into the AI debate. He's saying, you know, the Oscar-winning actor. Artificial intelligence is so advanced, I can star in films after I'm dead, he says. He says, there's a bona fide possibility right now. If I wanted to, I could get together and pitch a series of 7 movies that would star me in them, in which I would be 32 years old from now until Kingdom Come. Anybody can outcreate themselves at any age they are by way of AI or deepfake technology. I could be hit by a bus tomorrow, says Tom Hanks. That's it. But performances can go on and on and on. Outside the understanding of AI and deepfake, there will be nothing to tell you that it's not me and me alone. And it's going to have some degree of lifelike quality. That's certainly an artistic challenge, but it's also a legal one. We actually played that for you like a few months ago. And this is AI's version of Tom Hanks's voice.
The great thing about Play.ht is that you can clone your own voice or use existing high-quality voices. It is crazy good. You cannot tell if these are human voices or machine ones anymore.
Yeah. Could you? Could you spot it in a sort of a blind tasting, as they call them? And I know that with the Writers Guild of America, part of what they're on strike for is because of AI. And they want it written into the rules that Hollywood producers and TV producers can't use AI to write scripts, or they can't use existing scripts to train AI to write scripts. And the people in charge are refusing to do that because they know what the future is. And it's going to be difficult to police that anyway, isn't it? Mad stuff. I watched Still last night. John was talking about it yesterday on text. It's the documentary about Michael J. Fox's, I suppose, not his battle, but how he's living with Parkinson's. He's in his 60s now, his early 60s, and he was diagnosed with early onset or young onset Parkinson's in his late 20s. And it's a very powerful documentary. And they cleverly, indeed brilliantly, use clips of all his movies to tell the story. And they also use his audiobook. I think he voiced it about 10 years ago, along with an interview with him now. And it all adds up to a very impactful 90 minutes of documentary. And it's very sad when you see, because he was one of those very physical actors, and he was constantly running around the place as Marty McFly and other characters he played. He was constantly on the move. And at the beginning of the documentary, the guy who's making the documentary says to him, you know, can you remember what it was like to be still? Because, of course, one of the symptoms of Parkinson's is that tremor thing. And he said, no, I can't, because I was never still. As a child, as a young man, always moving, always moving. Yeah, it's very moving. And his wife, Tracy Pollan, who he met on the set of Family Ties, they've been together since they were in their 20s, and it's a beautiful relationship they have, and he speaks so adoringly about her, and she minds him because he needs minding at this stage. One of the sort of interesting sidebar movie trivia things I wasn't aware of was that Michael J. Fox was the first choice for Back to the Future. But at the time, he was in the middle of, I don't know, series two or series three of Family Ties. It was very successful. He was the star. The makers of Back to the Future went to the makers of Family Ties and says, you know, can we have him? Can we have him? We want him to star in this movie, Back to the Future. And they said, no, you can't have him. So they went ahead and started making Back to the Future with a guy called Eric Stoltz. And it just didn't work out. Just didn't work out, I suppose, because they had made their mind up that they wanted Michael J. Fox. So they went back to the people in Family Ties and said, listen, we are going to reshoot all the scenes with Marty McFly in them. Will you please release Michael J. Fox? And they came to a compromise where he was doing two jobs a day. So he was doing his day job, I suppose, was Family Ties. And then when he was finished that, he was in a chauffeured car off to the set of Back to the Future, shoot that into the early hours of the morning, get up again and do the whole thing all over again. But he's an amazing man and it's an amazing documentary. It's on Apple Plus. Still is the name of it. And it's highly recommended from here. Still on movie stars, Liam Neeson. This is good. He has revealed that he will only consider a script for a movie if it manages to stop him thinking about his next cup of tea. That's a real Irish one. So the quote is, if my agent sends me a script and I get to page five and I think distractedly, oh, I must make some tea, that's not a good sign. He said, on the other hand, if he can read a script from start to finish and only think about making a cup of tea at the end, then that's a good sign. So there, that's great. This upset me today. I don't know if it upset you, but it's a tweet from a Cork Green Party councillor called Oliver Morn. And he has successfully canvassed Cork City Council to get an age-friendly parking bay outside the AIB Bank in Glanmire. Which all sounds great. Until you hear the cut-off age. It's a courtesy bay similar to a parent and baby bay, but it's for people aged 55 and over. Yeah, come on. I just got really annoyed. I just got really, really annoyed. Anyway, he says, the idea has been tried out by local authorities. Let me know what you think. Well, I think it's far too young of a cut-off. You can't have people thinking they're old when they're 55. Come on! Oliver, it's not a good message to send out there, because a lot of it's in the mind. Anyway, I'm sure it's a great thing if you're of an age where you need that sort of thing. But 55, come on. Good news if you're on your way to Dublin Zoo this weekend. There's a 25% discount on some of their tickets to celebrate Endangered Species Day. Endangered Species Day is marked annually on the third Friday in May, which is this Friday. Tickets purchased online for this Saturday, May 20th and Sunday, May 21st will be discounted by 25%. That is one quarter in old money. So that's something. And the weather's supposed to be good. Joanna Donnelly this morning said with a smile in her voice, it's going to get progressively warmer as we go through the days, which is great. We thought we were very posh in our house. We had Imperial Leather soap. Affordable luxury. I think that was. Is that what it said in the ad?
You and your family have worked hard for life's little luxuries. Some you can only afford now and again.
Bermuda looks nice.
Simon, Bermuda.
Roger, Wilkes.
But there's one luxury you should never be without. Imperial Leather. Imperial Leather. Luxury you can afford.
Ah, luxury
every
day. You can afford. Thank you very much, Mr. Voiceover Man. And that was, if you saw the TV ad, if you remember it, they had a bath in the aeroplane. We didn't have that now, strange enough, in Campion Crescent in Kildare, but we did have a bar of Imperial Leather soap. And one of the mysteries about that bar of soap has been solved today. It is the sticker on the back. So as you used the Imperial Leather bar of soap to wash your hands and your face and all sorts of things, and the soap was used up, the sticker was always there, and you thought, it just doesn't work. It's a bit of an annoyance. Well, it's there for a reason. It turns out the metallic label is designed to stop the bar of soap from sticking to a soap dish. You see? By putting your bar of soap in the dish with the label facing downwards, a gap between the soap and the dish is created, meaning soapy residue isn't left behind. Every day's a school day. Every day is a school day. Now, if you let me smell Imperial Leather again, I'm right back there in my childhood, a bit like Old Spice aftershave. That was my dad's aftershave. And that's, they tell us, the scientists tell us that of all the senses, our olfactory sense is the most powerful at evoking memories. So it could be the perfume of your first love, or your dad's aftershave, or your granny's brown bread baking in the oven. All of those smells bring us right back to where we smelt them when we were younger. It's nice. 515 on ray at rte.ie. Sound, I don't know where sound is on the list of senses that evoke memories. Right back to the 70s. Yes, there's only 12 of them, 1975 to 1979. Fawlty Towers. It's returning, we told you this, yes. And then they're leaking all sorts of information. So if you don't want to know anything about it, close your ears or whatever you might do. So John Cleese has revealed the new one starts with Sybil's death and Basil's daughter getting a text message from her father saying, Sybil did. She texts back, Sybil did what? Basil is about to deliver the eulogy and says what an absolutely wonderful woman Sybil was. And then the camera pans around and you see that behind his back, Fawlty has his fingers crossed. Yes. He adds, Sybil dies and Basil goes to see his daughter because it was all part of a naughty affair that he once had with a guest at the hotel. My daughter will probably be a hotelier who's running this small hotel. It's going to be a sort of slightly posh boutique hotel in the Caribbean with a multicultural staff because that's the world of hotels and there'll be no one in except Basil. So that's what they're saying. So it's they're moving to the Caribbean. And that's going to be hitting our screens soon. Castle Rock Entertainment, Rob Reiner's company are making that. Now, let's see what you're saying. Herons, afternoon, Ray, afternoon. We named our heron on the Dargle River in Bray, Gil Scott Heron. Ah, big fan of that. That's Mr. Gull. Probably not his real name. The heron will be televised. The heron will not be televised. The grey heron is a carnivorous bird, so it's unlikely it's waiting to be fed by passers-by. It's more likely Hungry Henry is a displaced, immature bird looking for a suitable habitat, says that person. And AI, the other kind, laughing here, which you're talking about AI, the AI man who calls to deal with our cows can barely write his name, never mind a script, says Simon. Ray, I'm 54. And get an old person membership in my gym and could outbench a load of the young bucks. Who cares? If they're given over 55 parking space, take it, take it. I'm on the way to the gym now. Will you be interested in hearing one of our guests today, Tammy Noyan, who's one of Ireland's best weightlifters. She's coming in to tell us her story. Looking forward to that. On Imperial Leather, Marty says, you've just brought me right back. The Imperial Leather soap, my mother used to buy it. We always had the sticker on the front, face up. Going even further back, does anyone remember the smell of carbolic soap? The red soap? I do, Marty. That was in my granny's house. So if you're to put a bar of carbolic soap in front of me and I whiffed it, that'd be back to Granny Bonner's house. I was asked in hospital recently for my urine sample as they had to test for pregnancy. I'm 61, and after I told them, they couldn't stop apologising, but they had one happy camper. Says Cathy, there you go. Yeah, they thought I was childbearing age. Woohoo! Yeah. Of course, with modern medicine, you can still have a child at 61 if you so wish. 515 on ray at rte.ie. We'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first, get a superstar.
Islands in the stream.
There you go, get a superstar. Little help from Islands in the Stream. Praz on RT Radio 1. 515 on ray at rte.ie. I'd forgotten Charlie Sheen took over from Michael J. Fox on the last two series of Spin City in 2000 after Michael J. Fox announced he had Parkinson's. Brilliant documentary, by the way. It's very sad seeing him now as he is. And he was telling the documentary maker how he had all these various strategies because he kept his diagnosis a secret for around 10 years. But they'd all these clips of him in movies and in Spin City, and it was his left hand that was giving him all the problems, and he had all these little strategies of hiding the movement in it. Like he was always fidgeting with his watch, or he was always holding a briefcase or a telephone or something like that, and they showed all clips of that. It's fascinating. Hungry Henry, my foot, Ray, he ate all 7 goldfish in our pond. Says, whoo, right, it's a problem. The big heron down Ringsend way. That's Jean or Jeanne. Right. Any more sightings of Hungry Henry, 5 on 5 on RedRT.ie. We are looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. The Heron did it. Yeah, two quizzers, three whodunit questions on music, film, sport, books, politics, TV, comedy, anything that involves human endeavour. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. And if you go with a clue, it's easier, so you get 1 point for a correct answer. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two adults and two children in a lodge at Fota Island Resort, nestled at the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from Cork City. Pack your bags and escape to your own private island this summer with Fota Island Resort. Enjoy complete privacy and five-star luxury in one of the exclusive 2, 3 or 4 bedroom self-catering lodges, perfect for families, groups or friends of or even golfers, fellow golfers, a group of golfers that suit perfectly. Today we're giving one lucky listener a chance to win a two-night stay for two adults and two children. Photaisland.ie. Okay, here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. Which Disney film has recently been remade? The Little Mermaid or The Massive Mermaid? So which Disney film has recently been remade? The Little Mermaid or The Massive Mermaid? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the 2024 Paris Olympics may seem like a while away, but for our next guest, the preparations have already begun. I'm joined now by one of Ireland's top weightlifters, Tammy Noyan. Good afternoon, Tammy.
Hi, how are you?
Great to see you.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
Yeah, yeah. So we've loads to talk about.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So. First of all, I want to talk about your surname, which is Vietnamese.
Yes.
Nguyen.
Yes. Nguyen.
Nguyen, yeah. Now, we spoke about this name before.
Yes.
Because it's the most popular surname in Vietnam.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Like, nearly 40% of the people in Vietnam are Nguyens.
Yeah. I don't know why, though. It's just a really popular name. It's like over in Ireland, like Patrick or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think something to do with Vietnamese emperors in the past. So everybody used to take the emperor's name to get in, you know, to... So
oh, really?
Like them.
Is that how it works?
That's how it works.
Oh, did not know that.
But you left Vietnam when you were just a child.
Yes, of course. Yes,
I did. What age were you?
I left when I was about, I think, 6, turning 7.
Right.
I arrived to Ireland when I was, in 2003.
Okay.
I came over here.
And what age are you now?
Oh, I'm 26. I have to think about that there.
And who did you come over with?
I came over with my dad.
Right.
Yes.
And the rest of the family stayed behind, did they?
Yes. So my dad and myself came over here to Ireland first. And then my brother and my mom stayed over in Vietnam. And they followed us over, I think, about 2 years after.
Right.
Yeah.
And why Ireland?
To be honest, I don't really know why. My dad just decided, so we just had to follow. That was it. I don't really know, like, why specifically this country.
Yeah.
But
So you're 6 or 7 and you're coming to a completely different country.
Yes, it was very daunting at the start.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the only time I remember stepping into the airport and I'm like, why is everyone's nose so big? I'm so sorry to say that, but I was like, and why is Aaron so like white? Because I'm so Asian and our nose are flat.
Yeah.
And like, obviously the skin color is different. So I didn't know where I was going.
Yeah.
All I knew was coming down the airport, I'm like,
big nosed white people.
Yeah. Sorry. Am I allowed to say that?
No, yeah. Probably fine. It's a fact.
That's the only thing I remembered was coming down the airport. I'm like, and then everyone's so tall.
Yes.
So tall. And I'm so small.
What height are you?
4'10" about.
Right.
Yeah. So I was told I'm a midget.
No, you're not, are you?
Yeah. If you're under 5
challenged, I think is what they say now, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're under 5 foot, then you're counted as a midget.
Right. Vertically challenged.
Yeah.
They don't use the midget word anymore, I think.
Sorry.
Yeah. So you land here with your dad and your mum and your brother are still back in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So how long were you here with your dad on your own?
It was about 2 years, I think so. About 2 years before my mum came over, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. That must have been a tough time for you.
It is very tough, and it's probably a very touchy subject, but I think I'm kind of over that part now. But yeah, it was a really, really tough time for us.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how was your English?
Oh, I didn't have any English.
Right.
Yeah, like it was... obviously coming to a new country, new language, obviously a new culture, didn't know anything. So I had to learn everything from
scratch.
Beginning, like yes. From scratch. Yeah, yeah. That was, yeah.
So you were in a primary school with no English.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How did that go for you?
Well, so far I remember I didn't have a lot of friends because they were like, who's this girl? Back then, like a multicultural thing is not really a big thing back then.
Yeah.
Now it is, and they're kind of it's more important now, but back then not
yes.
really. And I didn't really make any friends back then, and I was kind of mostly kind of by myself or sometimes with somebody who was from another country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ireland has changed so much in those 20 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has yeah. changed
for the better.
A lot.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were delighted to see your mum when she arrived.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah, when my mum arrived then, what we spoke about earlier on, everything just felt back to normal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. What do your parents do?
My parents owns a Chinese called Clare Hall Chinese in Clare Hall.
Yes.
So they opened that back in 2012.
Right.
And they have been working since there every
okay.
day.
Yeah. Now, the weightlifting.
Yes.
If you were in a lineup of people, you probably wouldn't pick you out as a weightlifter.
Do you not think so?
No.
Do you know what? Yeah, I was standing outside and I was speaking to Joe, and he's like the manager for the orchestra.
The orchestra, yeah, yeah. Tall Joe.
Yeah, and he was like, who are you? I'm like, and I had my foot on the barbell.
Yeah.
And he was like, is that a barbell or is like a footstool? And I was like, oh no, sorry, this is a barbell. And he was like, what do you do? I'm like, I do weightlifting. He's like, show me. So I was doing weightlifting.
For Joe, yeah. The manager of the orchestra.
Yeah.
Right, there you go.
yeah, correct. So funny. So random.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you get into it?
So I started doing, going to the gym a little bit. And what do I do? Yeah, I was going to the gym when I was like 15 and I always had an interest in sports. And then I seen this girl on Instagram and she was just like, so jacked, like she was just ripped.
So which?
Jacked.
Jacked.
Like ripped. Like,
right.
Really like.
Muscly.
Yeah.
So
ripped, I,
right.
yeah.
Okay.
Built.
Yeah, built. Okay. These
and
are all
then,
new words to me.
Yeah.
Jacked. Built. You look so jacked. Right, okay, fine.
Sorry about.
No, it's good. It's
and
good.
Then I texted her and I asked her, what did she do? And she said she did CrossFit.
Right.
And then I joined a CrossFit gym. So they kind of about the first week I joined a CrossFit gym, they said to me like you're really good at Olympic weightlifting. I'm like, hey, what's that? Like, you know, like, hey, what's this? And then he said, you should do like a weightlifting competition further down the line. And I just said, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, same thing.
Right.
Yeah, and then I just did my first competition and that's how it came about.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it ever since. That's 10 years you're into it now, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, so I competed for a couple of years, about two years, and then I took a massive gap.
Your children?
Yes, and yeah.
Two
yeah,
children.
Yeah. And that, yeah. And
yeah.
But I was still training in between, yeah.
Yeah.
So I came back now to do proper, like, compete.
Okay, and your impetus, your reason to get back into it was your brother, your little brother.
Impetus,
the reason. You know,
oh,
the,
right,
the,
okay.
The reason.
Sorry, don't know that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were sitting down watching the telly.
Yes, correct.
Right, which
yes.
Olympics was it?
It was Tokyo.
Right.
So one of my ever goals is to qualify for the Olympics with my brother.
Right.
And I've set that back in an article in 2015. And obviously I went and pursued into business and had kids and he went and pursued into his dreams. So he walked out of the opening ceremony and I had a baby in my hands.
Right.
And I says, oh, I don't like this feeling.
What's his sport?
He does badminton.
Nat?
Yes, Nat.
What age is he?
He is 22.
So he represented Ireland at the Tokyo Olympics.
Yes,
wow.
Yes. That was his first Olympic
yeah.
and he has a couple more to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you would like to be walking out with him in Paris. Yeah,
my
next
goal
year.
Is to walk out of that opening ceremony with my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're one of the best weightlifters in the country, but the standard, you say, this is your words, not mine, isn't very high in this country for weightlifters. We're not known as a weightlifting country.
Yes, correct.
Right. Okay.
Yes. So like weightlifting is to Sport Ireland, weightlifting is known as an underdevelopment sport, but I don't believe it is now. Because there are so many other athletes and they, like, even people training, like the membership and everything like that has gone up in weightlifting.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's not the standards in Ireland here. Like, people have reached that standard now.
Okay.
So we can.
So there's like, growing interest in
yes,
it.
Yes, correct.
A lot more people going to gyms.
Exactly.
A lot more people lifting heavy weights.
Correct.
So.
And social media as well is very big right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. This may not mean anything to our listeners, but I suppose the best way to impress upon them how good you are is you lift twice your weight.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I did.
What's that? What is that?
I lifted 98 kilos in the clean and jerk.
Right.
And 75 snatch. So you don't even know what that is, don't you? Not? No.
I think I do. The snatch is where you snatch it off the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. So
and then the clean and jerk is where you have it on your resting on your shoulders and you push it up.
Yes, correct.
See,
correct.
See, yeah.
Yeah, you know briefly about it, which is good.
More than
most
people.
Yes, I was
paying attention when the Olympics were on. It's a fascinating sport to watch.
Yeah, of course. Like it's very like explosive. It's fast.
Yeah.
You need a lot of strength and overall like strength, power. And it's just you and the bar.
Yeah. And which time do you put into it?
At the moment right now, well, I'm going training after this. So today I've put in about 4 hours, 5 hours.
What?
2 a.m. and then I went home, I rest, I ate, had a meeting and then in here and then going back to training after
this.
So
4 or 5 hours a day.
Yes, correct, yeah.
And is that all just lifting or do you do other things?
No, like people think when you're doing Olympic weightlifting, it's just lifting weights. No, it's got to do with rehab. It's got to do with like accessories, bodybuilding and just a lot more like specific exercises. Not like obviously you do Olympic weightlifting as 2 exercises, but you don't do that every single day.
No. It'd be boring as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course. There's like going to be plyometrics inside as well. And sometimes it's conditioning, which is people think like, what? You do conditioning? Yeah, I do conditioning as well.
So what's that?
Conditioning is like an overall general fitness.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Like burpees on the bike or something like that.
Press ups, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Do you go to the gym?
Do I go? No.
No. Okay. Sorry about that.
No, I do a bit at home.
Okay, okay, that's good. Yeah. Nice chest. Sorry, do you know what I said? Nice chest.
Yeah, well, thank you. That set me up for the day.
Yeah, that's good. Nice compliment.
Yeah, with the over 55 parking bays me behind. Yeah. So then now, where was I?
Sorry about that. I'm going completely off topic there now. Am I okay?
I was just joking there.
Yeah.
So you're married and you met your husband doing
CrossFit.
Yes. So he runs a gym.
Yes,
you mentioned
Mark.
That you have your own business as well.
Yes, correct.
Eyelashes.
Yes. What a random business, isn't it? Yes. So I was actually doing eyelashes to fund myself to go compete for Ireland.
That's how
it started off. And then I seen an opportunity in business, which is doing the eyelashes. You see these?
Yeah, I see them. Yeah. I know what eyelashes are. Yes.
And then I just said to myself, like, look, I'm going to pursue into business.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm not getting paid for doing weightlifting. So I'm going to
support yourself.
Reality.
And you have brought a trainer over from Malaysia.
Yes, correct. Faisal. Well, I call him Coach. I feel really awkward calling him
Faisal Baharam. He was in the Olympics himself, was he?
Yes, he was in Athens 2004 and he's a Commonwealth gold medalist and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
He's your coach?
Yes, he's my coach, yeah.
Okay.
And he's living over here at the moment right now.
So what happens in the coming months now? Because usually for various sports, you have to qualify, don't
yeah.
you? So
yeah, of course.
Do you have to lift a certain weight or do you have to win a certain competition?
So basically how the qualification work is top 10 in the Olympic rankings gets to compete in the Olympics.
Right.
And then the route B is the first person through continental gets to obviously go to Olympics as well. So I'm still like fighting my way in that top 10.
So you won yeah. bronze in Europe?
Yeah. I won bronze in the European Championships. That's only a little goal towards the next step.
Okay.
So I lifted 75 and 98, but in order for me to probably get to the Olympic standards, I need to lift about 80 and 82 and above 100, maybe 103.
And do you think
you don't even understand?
I do. No, yeah, 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 well, I know yeah. that you have to go a good bit more than you have done already.
Put this way, I need a 10 kilo increase in my tone.
That's you see. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's all. That. Sorry.
So are you going in that direction? Obviously.
Of course. Yes, absolutely. Yes, yes. The numbers I paid at Euros there was just a normal training weekend for me. I do that like obviously on a daily basis.
So I'm intrigued. You know, when you people get PBs at the Olympics.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by that because I'm wondering, why didn't they try to lift that weight in training? Would that not make more sense?
So with PBs, like a personal best, it doesn't just come like, oh, I'm going to PB today. You don't know. Obviously, you have to peak towards that
right.
weight. You can't just go in and lift 100% straight away. You have to start increasing, peaking towards that PB. And you obviously have to build, like get stronger, build better.
Yeah.
And towards the Olympic rankings and the Olympic standards, a PB is very hard to get. And obviously, when you're lifting a PB there, you need the full number one atmosphere.
Of course.
The adrenaline.
Yes, yes, yes. All of that contributes
that extra,
to it. Yes, yes.
Yes.
The extra.
Like you, yeah.
And speaking of, this is important because a lot more talk about women in sport now.
Yes.
And there was front page of the Irish Times a few weeks ago where they were introducing darker shorts because of
darker
women.
Darker shorts?
Yeah.
What?
Because women are having periods and if they have light shorts.
Oh,
you see,
right. So, okay.
Which, you know where I'm going here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, it's very strange to talk to a man about this, but okay, I'm going to talk.
I've five sisters.
Oh, right.
I'm married
okay.
to a woman. I have
yes.
a daughter. I've
you know the stuff. Yeah. You
well,
know.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. But really, they spoke about that.
Yes. They spoke about that. Yeah.
That's actually very true. You know that I only kind of wear really dark kind of leggings and shorts because if I ever pee myself or...
Yes.
Things like that does happen.
And of course, yeah. when you have children. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. That's, obviously you don't have kids. Like, oh no, you do have kids.
I do have kids, but I haven't given birth.
Yes. But other like mothers will relate to me and they will understand what I'm talking
Your
about.
Your pelvic floor.
Yes. So when I first had kids, like I didn't know what a pelvic floor was. I was never actually told what a pelvic floor is. Like, to me, like pelvic floor, I thought was something off the ground, like to jump or something like that. So I didn't know what a pelvic floor was. I remember a nurse telling me, like, you make sure you do your pelvic floor exercise. I was like, what the hell is that? But, you know, that was information for me that was told by our nurse. But it should be actually given information to you, obviously, before you have kids. Now, I never went to the classes, so that's probably why I didn't know.
Yeah.
But
the prenatals.
Yeah, I never went to that. But it should be like more online on social media right now for other people, and especially with the afterbirth as well.
Yes. So it's a consideration with you when you're weightlifting.
Yes,
your pelvic floor.
Yes,
you have to consider that. Yes.
Yeah. And this is where Emily will speak about to me about, remember, competing. You're probably going to ask me that question now. Is it about the nappy part?
I'm fascinated by it.
What? Really?
Yeah, well, you know, it's something that people would know about.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
Do you know, like, it's a topic that I was really embarrassed to talk about. Like, when you spoke about periods there, I'm like, oh, geez, you know, I'm talking to a man about it and it's not my husband. But, like,
and
it
do you feel uncomfortable about it? Are you okay?
Not
with
now.
No, okay,
I'm very comfortable now. But at the start, so I was like, oh, gosh. But the... Wait, what are we talking about again?
We're talking about nappies.
Okay, nappies. about nappies. Yeah, like, I wear a nappy now when I compete.
Right.
I was very embarrassed about that at the start because, I was laughed at the start. But no, I don't really care.
Yeah.
It helps me at the end of the day in my competition.
And you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. Yes. I don't pee myself on social media,
And
it's not being recorded and it's not being put on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you don't want a video of you to.
No.
Pee yourself.
No, you don't want that on.
Don't you?
No, you don't at all. You don't
at all. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
So what age are your children?
Lily is 4 and baby Mark is 2.
Right. And does Lily know what you do? She knows about the weightlifting?
Not really. No. They know I go do up down.
Up down.
That's it. They do up. I'm like, Mommy, go do up down now. And they're like, okay, see you later. And that is all. But I tell them I'm going to work.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
So how hopeful are you now of qualifying for Olympics 2024 in Paris?
There is still a 10 kilo for me to go.
Okay.
So a 5 kilo in the snatch and a 5 kilo in the clean and jerk. I believe I already have that 10 kilo already. I just need to make it happen. All right. If I believe in it, then I'm pretty sure that I'm confident in it. I am close. Let's say I'm probably the first person to be, the closest ever in weightlifting. But, I have hope and that's all that matters to me.
I don't expect you to know the answer. Final question. Have we ever qualified in weightlifting before?
Never.
Never.
I'm probably the closest.
Okay, right,
ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Listen, I really enjoyed that chat.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and we wish you well.
Thank you
so
much.
I know you have to go off and do more up-downs, so we let you go. And we'll talk to you again before next year.
Thank you.
And wish Nat all our best wishes as well.
Of course, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tammy. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Tammy Noyan is who we were speaking to, Thammynguyen. I don't know your guest name, but I'm really enjoying your interview with her. She's amazing. And it'll be great to have the Noyan siblings together in Paris. Watch out for the Whiffen twins as well, Daniel and Nathan, who are brilliant swimmers, going for gold, says C. And somebody else says on gyms, where's that one there? Ray, I'm 62. I joined a gym last week. I went to the instructor and asked him if he could teach me how to do the splits. How flexible are you? He asked. Well, I can't do Tuesdays, I said. Sorry about that. It's Kieran in Dublin. Thanks for that, Kieran. And on smells, I can still smell the cod liver oil that my mother used to give us every Friday, says Sean. And on Imperial Leather, hi Ray, Imperial Leather had a tagline in one of its ads saying it rests on its name, as I seem to remember. That was meant to explain to put it with the label facing down so it wouldn't be sitting in a pool of water and getting soggy and gooey. That was what I figured anyway. Brings back early 1960s memories made by Cousins. That's Gina. Thanks for that, Gina. And there's more Imperial Leather text there. We'll get to them after 4 o'clock. And now on the line is Louise Kennedy. Hello, Louise.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Congratulations again.
Thanks very much.
Is it ever going to end? Is it ever going to end?
I mean, I think it probably is, yeah, in fairness. That's probably the end of it now, but it's been very nice.
Yeah, so this is Louise Kennedy, author of Trespasses, I should say, and she won the Novel of the Year, and now she's won the Bookseller Magazine Award for Best Debut Fiction. And where was it on last night?
It was on in Grosvenor House in Mayfair in the big swanky ballroom.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you know you were going to win beforehand?
No, I really didn't.
No.
And to the extent that I was fully convinced that Bonnie Garmus, who wrote the brilliant Lessons in Chemistry, that was a bestseller all the last year, and it's still a bestseller.
Yes.
And I was fully convinced that she was going to win. So I was very relaxed, and I probably... was drinking a bit more wine than water at that stage.
Yeah.
And then they said the Trespasses had won. So I think that I was, I don't know. I mean, I think I kind of barreled towards the stage looking very confused.
Amazing.
Because,
but both you and Bonnie Garmus are still in the top 10 in my local shop. Which is brilliant. I just bought it for my wife's birthday, Trespasses, for I've been talking about it, because I gave away the copy I had to a man who sells lawnmowers who's from Belfast.
Oh, you told me about that before.
Yes, yeah, Tony, yes.
He's
yeah.
He's a Nordy, like myself. Yes, he yes, came
yeah,
in the
70s yes, or something. Yeah, that's it, exactly. Yeah. Same sort of vintage as myself and yourself. So Trespasses, brilliant. And you're also nominated in another for another award coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is?
Well, it's called the Women's Prize. So
yes.
That's kind of a big one. I really don't expect to win that. So it is, I think it's the biggest prize for fiction by women in the English language from all over the world.
Right.
So I'm in a short list of six.
Wow.
But there'd be a few very heavy hitters on there.
Yeah.
Barbara Kingsolver, who wrote a book called Demon Copperheads. That's a retelling of David Copperfield from the point of view of a young fella whose really life has been destroyed by the opioid crisis. And then Maggie O'Farrell's on that list as well. And then there's other really interesting books too. There's a book called Pod that's about dolphins.
Right.
And a book called Fire Rush by Jacqueline Crooks. Yeah, so anyway, I'm not expecting anything there at all, but it's hugely flattering.
Yes,
on the list.
Well, speaking of flattering, some of the quotes from the judges of the bookseller magazine judging panel, Book of the Year. It is one of the best books I've ever read, declared one judge. A masterpiece, agreed another.
Oh, holy God.
Yeah. Trespasses introduced me to a completely different world I didn't know anything about, said one judge. Kennedy, that's you, Louise, is writing about the Troubles in a way I haven't read before.
Oh, wow.
And they also praised the eye-catching jacket, as in the cover.
The cover's amazing. Yeah, Greg Heinemann did an unreal job with the cover, actually. And the title of the book wasn't always Trespasses. It was a working title, I suppose, a different title for a long time. And then you know, we came up with another title for the book, and I think that his cover really made me kind of fall in love with the title. It just felt right.
Yeah, yeah. And this I'm interested. Trespasses was the critics' most picked book of the year in 2022, and the judges are eager to see what Kennedy, a standout debut writer in her 50s, writes next. Oh,
I'd say my editor in Bloomsbury is very interested to see what I'm going to write next as well. I better stop talking about the last one and start bloody working. But anyway,
and do you feel increasingly a pressure?
I mean, I think if I thought about it, I'd probably go around the bend. So I'm very good at not thinking about things. It turns out I spent most of my life worrying about things that never happened.
Nice, yeah.
I don't know why in the last few years I've managed not to do that. So I don't know. I'm just at the moment. I was doing really well with writing a second book until maybe late February when I went, first of all, to a literary festival in Lahore in Pakistan and then went from there to Adelaide. And I haven't really been at home much since. So I can't write and be on the road and talk about Trespasses. I just can't do it. So
yes.
I'm going to stop all of this nonsense in the middle of June and just start writing again.
So you literally are a victim of your own success here, aren't you?
Well, look, it's not a victim. My God, I'm really not complaining.
Like,
amazing books are written that don't get half the attention that mine has. I'm so lucky and grateful. But it's just I'd say I'm sick of me. I'd say people are bloody sick of me now at this stage. So I just need to go back to work.
Go back to work. So is it in a room? Have you an office? Is it the attic or where is it?
This sounds very fancy. There's a shed in the garden. Now, the shed was here already. Somebody had converted a very basic kind of building, like a shed in the garden, because the person who lived here before was somebody, I don't know what you call them, she was one of those people who put your back in when you put it out.
Chiropractor.
No, not a chiropractor, the other one.
Osteopath. Osteopath, right, okay.
Yes. So the room was used as a clinic, and we did nothing with it for a few years. It was just full of, broken bodyboards and half empty tins of paint and stuff like that. And then when I started writing, there was bits of paper and books accumulating all around the house. So we stuck, an IKEA floor out there that cost about 50 quid and put bits of whatever old furniture in it. So I work out there. I need to just get back out there and look around.
Yes,
it's nice. There's a school behind my house, and you can hear the kids, playing in the, during the day and stuff. And I don't know, it's grand.
Is it Pavlovian that once you're out there and you hear the sounds and get the smells, that the writer's brain clicks in again?
I think for me it's about just going out there, that I leave my phone in the house, and it just feels like once I'm leaving the actual house, then I feel like I'm getting away to some extent. I don't really understand why, but and it's quiet, and also I spent a good few years working from the kitchen table, but I think if I'm in there, I'm noticing like kind of greasy fluff on the skirting boards,
yes.
and I'm thinking I should be putting things in like the washing machine or something. So at least if I'm outside, I'm maybe a wee bit less distracted by. I mean, a lot of that's procrastination, I guess, but but that's less of a problem.
Yourself and Bonnie Garmus, she's older than you, but both of you came to writing late in life.
Mm-hmm.
Was she there? Did you chat to her or share
your
experience?
No, I missed her. I had to go off and give an interview, and apparently she came to the table because I've met Bonnie before, and she's really she's a great person. She's very straightforward and funny and hardworking, and there's a humility about her and stuff as well. Like, she didn't expect any of this, and. And she won actually a prize for Author of the Year, which she totally deserved. And I was really thrilled for her, you know.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's great. And before we let you go, has it been optioned for a movie, Trespasses?
It is in development.
Right.
But for TV.
For TV.
If it's going to be anything, it'll be a four-parter.
Right, right.
I don't think I'm allowed to say much more than that.
No, but you've said enough there, yes. Because it would suit that. That format.
Hopefully. So, I'm told it's well in development and people are optimistic about it, but I think with these things, there's a lot that can go wrong. So just whatever happens, it'll be a huge bonus and it'll be kind of amazing to see, you know?
Well, congratulations again. Good luck in the next awards. And I will say it again, it's there, Trespasses, in your local bookshop. It's a great read, and you don't need me to tell you, all the awards are saying it loudly and clearly. Louise, off you go. Down to the shed. See you. Thanks. Thanks.
Down to the shed.
Go on. Good
luck. Thanks a million.
Bye. That's Louise Kennedy there. I absolutely love Trespasses by Louise. It's an excellent book and I loved every page. Please pass on my thanks and best wishes to Louise. That's Alan there. Have we another commercial break to take? Yes, we do.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurma, good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Just to mention that we're going on the runs again. The runs. The end of June, we're doing 5 5K runs around the country. We're starting in Donegal, moving down to Sligo, across the West Meads, over to Wicklow and up to Dublin. And it'll be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We'll be doing them after the show. So we'll be driving around in our big RTE Roadcaster, parking up at the beginning of the run. And then we'd be inviting you to join us at 5:30 in the evening to go on a 5K run. And it's a perfect opportunity for somebody, as I said yesterday, who's been flirting with the idea of getting into a bit of running. Their friends or family might be involved and they might have seen the benefits of it. And they're looking for a target, something to, you know, to motivate them, to drive them on. Well, the Run with Rays could be just that thing, just that target, just that motivation. And as I said, it's June 26th, Donegal, 27th, Sligo. 28th in Mullingar, Westmeath, then over to Wicklow, and we finish up in Dublin then. And more about that in the coming days and weeks. Now, carbolic soap. Anne in Kerry's been on about that. She says, talking about carbolic soap, it was recommended by a friend recently, and now I use it for cleaning almost everything. Stains on clothes, as well as the bath, skin, sink, etc. Much less toxic than a lot of cleaning products out there. That's not skin, it's sink. Sorry, I just... just in case. But people used to use it, particularly those nasty ones, when you'd be out fixing a bike or fixing an engine, you come in and you'd be offered the carbolic soap to get rid of the grease from your hands. I remember the man in the Imperial Leather ad slapping a tiny safety belt across the soap in the dish beside the bath as the pilot banked the plane. The pilot responded, "Roger Wilco," to the instruction given to him by the man. I'm afraid to think how long ago that was. And yes, I remember the smell of carbolic as my nana scrubbed the doorstep of her house in Crumlin with carbolic soap. The bar was deep red in colour. Wow, what a trip down memory lane. Great days growing up in Crumlin, says A.D. in Talla. And on Herons, I love Herons. There was one on the canal towards Leeson Street down from Portobello in Dublin. He was on the wall fishing too far from the water. I feel there should have been a stone for him at the side of the water to make it easy for him to fish. And somebody else says they should call that heron Bertie. That's Sam, as in Bertie, A hern, Bertie the hern. Two quiz are standing by. Let's do it. The Who Done It quiz. Yeah, two quiz are standing by, and there is a prize, and it is a two-night stay for two adults and two children in a lodge at Foda Island Resort, nestled at the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from Cork City. Pack your bags and escape to your own private island this summer with Foda Island Resort. And their lodges, which come in 2, 3 and 4 bedroom self-catering iterations, I suppose, perfect for families, groups of friends or fellow golfers. FodaIsland.ie, FodaIsland.ie. That's the prize this week, and we say thank you very much to Foda Island. Louise Finnerty. Hello, Louise.
Hello, Ray.
You're in company there.
I have a little friend here beside me, little Reen. He's 6 months old.
Ah, hi, Reen. And he's the youngest. He's the youngest of four.
He's the youngest of four, yeah. He has two older brothers and an older sister as well. And his older sister, every time we're in the car, if we're going to swimming, she normally helps me with the quiz, but I don't have her today.
Right, okay.
So, my brain cells were removed from my placenta when he was born.
Get your excuses in early, Louise. That's
yeah,
what I
yeah,
was
for sure, to. For yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
So you're still on maternity leave?
Yes, I am. And I'm enjoying it. The weather is unbelievable here in Mayo today now. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah.
And it's supposed to get better as we go towards the weekend, which is great.
Oh, yeah. We need it badly.
Yeah. So there's Shuan, Owen, Aina and little Rian.
Yes.
Wow.
That's the gang.
That's the gang, right?
Yes.
Who's the hubby?
Paul is my husband.
Yes. Yeah. And these are all the questions I have to ask. And what's on the menu for dinner this evening?
On the menu for dinner is chicken curry.
Oh, nice. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Even though, like I was just saying to a researcher, they probably won't eat it because they'll be too hot. They'll just want ice cream.
Yeah. Although, that's the myth about curry. Of course, they eat curry in very hot countries because it brings your body temperature up to the temperature outside and that seemingly cools you down. I know it's counterintuitive. And good luck with explaining that to Shuan, Owen and Aina.
Yeah, thanks very much.
The man on the radio said it. I don't care what the man on the radio says. I want ice cream. Now, you're up against Darren Duffy in Dundalk, all the D's. How are you doing, Darren?
Hi, Ray.
Yeah.
All good.
It hasn't been lost on you that you're Darren Duffy from Dundalk, has it? No.
I've heard that a few times
I know. Sorry for my lack of originality. So you're finishing off work?
Yeah, just finished now, actually, Just home.
Great. And what's the plan for the rest of the evening?
I'm going to take the little lad. He's going to swimming lessons now at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And home for a bit of dinner, and then I'll go training myself.
Well, what's the training?
Taekwondo.
Right.
Yeah, so I teach taekwondo and I also partake in it as well.
How long have you been doing it?
About 15 years.
Are you flexible?
I was. Getting a little bit older now, so not as flexible as I used to be. I can still throw my leg up in the air.
Great. You can still do that kick, that impressive kick. Above. That's how you doing, Rain? Yeah, Rain's still with us. He wants us to get on with the quiz. So you've two children as well, and their names are?
Yeah, Jack and Caelan. Jack 30 yesterday. Oh. He was 6 yesterday.
And what ages are they?
Jack, he's 6 and Caelan 2.
Okay, let's get going then. You know the deal. I'll give you the category, then I'll ask you if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever's the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Okay, it's Louise versus Darren. Here we go. Now, Louise, it's musical duets. Duets.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah. So what do you want to do? Do you want to go for a clue or not?
No clue.
Okay, so two points for, and we need both obviously for the 2 points. Can you name this musical duet? Who's that?
Sonny and Cher.
It is Sonny and Cher. I got you, babe. Yes, well done. 2 points from 1965.
Thank you.
Darren, you know the idea now. Two people singing. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. Okay. So for two, can you name these two people?
Elton John and Kiki Dee.
It is Don't Go Breaking My Heart. Great song from 1976. You get 2 points. Well done. Good start from both the... So game show presenters, Louise, is the second category. Game show presenters.
I'll go no clue. Yeah.
No clue. Okay.
Yes.
So who is this?
Fashion designer Willy Bogner represented Germany in what sport? A, athletics. B, triathlon. C, skiing. What's her name that is? Willy Bogner. You've put skiing. Okay. Correct answer is, don't know this. Oh, great answer, Pat. Yeah. Close home.
Who's that?
Is it Bradley Wallace?
It is on The Chase, yes. The most popular quiz in the world.
Daytime television.
It's on everywhere, every day, all the time.
Yeah.
There you go. 2 points
when
you.
When you're on maternity leave, you want to go for the daytime television.
Yes. You know Bradley well.
Oh, he's
like
friend.
A member of the family, yes. Okay, yeah. So game show presenters, Darren, what do you want to do?
Yeah, I'll have to go with the two again.
Okay,
yeah.
So for 2 points, can you name this person?
From the centre, okay. It's one big number, all the way down. And one way and one the other. We have 2 and 4, 10 and 5, 9 and 100, and a target for the boys of 566.
Who's that?
Carol Vorderman.
It is on Countdown. Rachel Riley does that job now. You get 2 points. And a consonant. So it's 4-all. Well done. Final category is film characters now. Film characters as opposed to actors. So what do you want to do, Louise?
I'll go no clue, Ray.
No clue. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
So for 2 points, good luck with this.
Yeah.
Can you name this character from a movie?
These people don't dream about being rich. They dream about being able to watch their kids swim in a pool without worrying that they'll have to have their spine deteriorate, like Stan Blum, another client of ours. So before you come back here with another lame-ass offer, I want you to think real hard about what your spine is worth, Mr. Walker.
Who's that?
Oh, it's Julia Roberts.
Yeah, I need the name of the character.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh.
No, I needed the character. It's
no.
Yeah. Erin Brockovich.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You'll never forget that one. Never forget that one.
No, I won't.
Okay, you're on 4. It's not over yet. Darren, you still have a question in hand. If you get anything from this, you're today's winner.
Okay.
So what do you want to do?
I'll go for a clue.
Yes, that would be the wise thing to do. So here's your clue. Listen carefully. Tom Hanks played this character who liked to run. Can you name him for a point?
Do you want a chocolate?
Forrest Gump.
It is Forrest Gump. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well done, Darren. Enjoy.
Sorry,
Louise.
Yeah. Louise, tough. Your clue would have been Julia Roberts played this real-life advocate and activist, and I don't know if that would have helped.
No, it was lost in the gray matter somewhere in my brain.
Well, you got the baby brain excuse in early, so there you go.
Exactly.
We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Lovely to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of your maternity leave. See you, Louise.
Bye.
That's Louise Finnerty there in Mayo. Darren Duffy on the dock, well done.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, you're off. This is great because it's a 2-night stay for 2 adults and 2 children, which is the perfect match for you in a lodge in Foda Island Resort. And you can go to fodaisland.ie to see what's in store for you. Congratulations, Darren.
Thanks a million. That's brilliant.
Mind yourself. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we were speaking about AI at the beginning of the show. Well, ongoing at the moment is a congressional hearing in the United States of America. And the chief executive of OpenAI, the people responsible for ChatGPT, Sam Altman, is being questioned. And the chair of the congressional committee, or the Senate committee, Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal, opened the hearing by playing an audio introduction that sounded just like him. And then he revealed that the audio was actually made by voice cloning, which is obviously driven by AI. And this is what he said after it.
If you were listening from home, you might have thought that voice was mine and the words from me. But in fact, that voice was not mine. The words were not mine. And the audio was an AI voice cloning software trained on my floor speeches. The remarks were written by ChatGPT. When it was asked how I would open this hearing.
I see. So it's like it's going at an amazing pace, doubly exponential. That's what they're saying. And our legislators need to be wise to that, and they need to take it seriously. Like, you can do all these stunts, and numerous stunts have been done all over the world, but we have to take it seriously, and we have to legislate for things that might happen in the future. That was Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal. And Sam Altman, the chief executive of OpenAI, is supposedly going to say that regulation is needed. And a lot of these people are sort of, they just want to make a bit of money, and they just want to be the first to introduce advances in technology. And I suppose they shouldn't be responsible for what might happen if their technology falls into the wrong hands. Maybe that should be the job of legislators to regulate that, or I don't know, but it's happening, as I say, very quickly and in front of our eyes and our ears. That's something else. Okay, do we have time for this? No, we don't have time for a song. So we're going to Barry Kenny now. And usually when you introduce Barry Kenny, it's to do with a delay in trains or the fact that there isn't a tea trolley on the train to Waterford. But today we're talking to Barry about something completely different, because he's recently returned from a volunteering mission in Ukraine, where he worked in a kitchen serving the front line. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, Barry?
I'm good, Ray. How are you? It's also lots of good news we've been talking about under the railway as well.
Right. We yes, there is. There's always good news as well. Sorry about that. Yes, yeah. But today, as I say, something completely different. So the end of April, was it that you spent a week in Lviv?
Yeah, Lviv, which is obviously in western Ukraine, about 90 minutes or so from the Polish border. I took the train into there, actually, and I was working with an organization called Frontline Kitchen, and they prepare meals, so pre-packed and dehydrated meals that are then sent out to the front to serve the military, to serve the defenders of Ukraine.
And you volunteered before in Moldova?
Yeah, last year I would have, for a couple of weeks, went to Refugee Support Europe. They were looking after Ukrainian refugees in Moldova, in Chisinau, the capital city. Moldova would have the highest number of Ukrainian refugees per head of population, and it is in itself quite a poor country, of course. So that organisation had set up what they call a dignity centre there, which was effectively like a kind of a mini shop with free credits and a community centre that Ukrainian refugees could use. So, as I spent time there last year, but when it was this opportunity, when I became aware of it, it was something I thought would be quite interesting to do, and something quite practical, I suppose, to help the people that are literally putting their bodies on the line.
Because there's a real connection then, isn't there? Frontline Kitchen, so you are helping prepare food that goes to the front line, to these men who are putting their lives on the line. To maintain freedom and democracy in Ukraine, and I suppose they're doing the rest of Europe a favour as well.
Completely, and it was that then the dynamic that you actually see there as well. This organisation actually was set up in 2014 by local women in Lviv when the invasion of the Donbass happened, and obviously the occupation of Crimea. But needless to say, when the full scale invasion happened last February, that their needs just exponentially increased. They certainly increased their own activity, and ultimately it expanded to international volunteers. A man called Richard Woodruff from Britain is very heavily involved, went there, I suppose, has certainly kind of raised the awareness and the fundraising for it, and also then the awareness for international volunteers and the opportunity for international volunteers. So you had people from like all over the world. You had people like me who were there for a relatively short time. You have people who'd kind of taken longer term sabbaticals, you know, 3-6 months, who were there also. But the mainstay and was the backbone was the local women still, who day in, day out, since the full-scale invasion, have been volunteering to prepare what is up to 15,000 servings a day of things like borscht, which is the Ukrainian soup, and other foods and cakes and things like that to get to the front.
And borscht, the main ingredient is beetroot, is it?
It is. I became intimately familiar with beetroot, Ray, in a way I didn't expect. Perhaps it is. It's in terms of a vegetable to be peeling and shredding, which is what we're doing. It's quite a messy one as well. It's as I say, that's the main one. But you've got potatoes, you've got carrots, cabbage as well. And as I say, we have a lot of other produce as well. You know, kind of mushroom based food, a lot of cakes as well. So huge operation. In a kind of a yard and a small enough building in the city centre of Lviv, in terms of taking delivery, preparing the food, dehydrating it, packing it, and sending it out again.
And was there chat when you were there about the real connection, as we mentioned already, and the fact, and I suppose this is the case, that one of those meals that you prepared could be somebody's last meal?
Yeah, I mean, there's an upbeat environment, because as I say, you've got a lot of people coming together that obviously believe in a common cause. We had military people in and out. A lot of the time it was distributed by other people, by other volunteers, but we did have people from the military in and out of the centre as well. And there's a resilience, and we know that from afar. You don't have to be there to know that. There's also a very kind of a confidence and a determination to succeed. Of course, everybody from the volunteers to the people who called the centre, you know, they have family in the front line. They have relatives. They have people they care about. And when something like we've seen over recent nights in all over Ukraine happen, you know, the worry and upset is there. But there's a real determination and a belief that, you know, success will come and that, you know, they will force the Russians out. And obviously we sincerely hope that's the case.
I watched your video. You visited a cemetery, and is that a tradition, the flags and the photographs, or is that just something that has happened because of the war?
Well, certainly it has very much happened. There's the cemetery, because the main part of the cemetery is a very old cemetery next door to it. But this particular area was for the military, a military area. So you had the national flags. You tended to have the flags of the units or the flags of the city as well. And very, I suppose, kind of ornate and personally dedicated graves, always with the photo of largely the man who had died in military uniform, often with personal photos and often with personal artifacts. You know, it was a man who is, you know, fishing is clearly his passion, and the photo of him fishing and then little sculptures of fish on the grave. You had, you know, things like a 29-year-old man. There was a drawing from his son and daughter on the grave. It was a very affecting and very upsetting area. Because of all the flags, people tended to be, who were at the graveyard, tended to be kind of concealed from view. You'd almost be on top of them before you realised it. Yeah. And there was an older woman, and before I knew it, I was quite close to her, and all I could hear was sobbing over the grave of her son. And you know, it hits you in you know, it just unfortunately, it just takes your breath away in completely the wrong way. It is hugely upsetting to see.
And it goes without saying that Putin is public enemy number one. And I didn't know how to feel about young children being given rifles to point at a photograph of Putin, and then you were in a bar where you were given a pellet gun, an automatic pellet gun, which you drink to fire at a photograph of Putin. I suppose that's a release, is it? Is that some sort of release for people?
I mean, we all know in times of stress and in times of extreme pressure, you know what I mean, with the people that we're with and with the people that we're sharing that with, people, there can be a humour and a dark humour in it. And I know exactly what you're saying. You kind of think long term, well, you know, what is this due to a community and society? But you know, this is an existential situation. You literally have got a neighbouring country that is denying your right to exist. So you do kind of look back, look at it and see, as you say, kind of this was in a, you know, in a lovely city centre area where there's bands playing, where there's candy floss being served in Lviv on a lovely spring weekend. And beside that, you have, as I say, a kind of a toy target, and with kids and adults being handled this kind of, you know, like the old play guns we had growing up to fire at a picture of Putin. And again, in a bar that was kind of one of these hidden bars, which is something of a Ukrainian tradition, where you've got the targets as well. You know, as you say, it can be a little bit shocking, but yeah. I'm certainly not one to judge on the release valves that people use in something that, you know, that man actually has caused to happen.
Why do you do it, Barry?
I suppose since the start of this, it's kind of been something that I believe strongly that, you know, a country has to have the right to, you know, to choose its own future. I think that, you know, like you and I, Ray, have grown up in a world where our continent has largely been at peace. And you've got somebody that's really trying to deny that right for a country to choose its own path and trying to upend that. So I believe in it very strongly. I have, just as well, by being interested in it, by following it, become motivated to do things. And look, it's a small thing. You know, there are people, there are many people in Ireland that are hosting Ukrainian refugees, and you know that, which is just a huge, enormous contribution. I'll be honest with you, I kind of didn't feel like a kind of sit at ease until I kind of had tried to go and do a bit. And as I say, again, it was only for a relatively short time. There are people that I've met out there I've met other Irish people out there. I've met people from across Europe, from the US, who are gone for really quite extended stays to do what they can. Not just there, you know, volunteering in far more risky places like, you know, Kharkiv and others.
Because Lviv is at the western extremity, nearly on the Polish border, and life is continuing pretty much, I suppose, against the backdrop of war, but as normal as you can get in that situation. You're very honest.
Yeah.
You said, like, that there's nearly a selfishness about volunteering because you get so much from it.
Yeah, and I suppose I learned that last summer in Chisinau. You know, I'm somebody who kind of follows the news and watches the news or whatever, and almost kind of passively in the past, and it did take me, and that you know, you, as I say, this was a very enjoyable experience, and it's an odd thing to say, and you feel slightly uncomfortable saying it, but the fact that you kind of are meeting people that, you know, with all different backgrounds, with all different life experiences, but who are united by kind of this common belief and want to participate in this way, you get an awful lot out of it. And the kind of, you know, seeing the women who kind of set up this organization, talking to them, learning more about what they're trying to do and been through, you know, you appreciate it a lot. And even when you do those short contributions, you know, there is huge appreciation back as well. I think the fact that people there can see the people from around the world,
it's,
are still thinking
solidarity,
about them, are still solidarity, wanting to help them, it goes a long way. It genuinely does.
So not a word about Irish Rail there. Barry Kenny, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. We'll talk again. Thanks Barry.
Ray.
Thank you. Bye. Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.